trapped, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Royal Park there.
A fighting spirit of the time.
He gets inside, well inside.
In any weather you can see a sweeping wind. Listening head and skin, you're not really behind the chair.
Oh, Cochin, just a little bit of genius.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
Well, so it's fair to say that, you know, we've been doing this show for a while and we've got a fairly regular pattern, and regular listeners will also appreciate that the timing of this podcast reflects very much either pressing work commitments or normally how keen we are to watch the show. And so I feel like we owe our listeners a small apology for the fact that we can't get a show out before Thursday, but at least from my perspective, watching the replays has been like drinking razor blades at the moment. So with that apology, what do you want to talk about first?
Well, I'm going to disagree with you off the bat and say I had an excuse, because as people will be able to tell, that my usual nasally tones are even more nasally than usual. I haven't been very well. I very dutifully watched the replay on Monday, and
wow.
actually got some level of relief on it. Now, regular listen, and let me explain this. We differ on this point, but sort of my hope of this year being the year where we crack the finals win and do something exciting in September. For me, that, and I don't want to debate this actual point, but the fact is, I think that dream's dead. So I'm not, but that's my point here. My point here is watching this game gave me some sort of, I knew that Viney had got 23 contested possessions. And when I saw he opened the starting bounce with Townsend against him, I realized, we've got some problems. I think I need to stop being angry about the season and just accept we are where we are and sort of move on. So I actually got some weird closure from the game, which is a strange reaction. And actually, Nick, weirdly, I found it somewhat not the worst game to watch. We were quite efficient in our inside 50s. If you look, our disposal to inside 50 ratio was by far the best it's been all year. And, you know, after the week before, obviously it wasn't hard to improve, but it, as I said, best all year. And our attack was functional at times, looked quite good. Maybe we can talk about our defence in a second. It was definitely not up to the standards been in the past Hardwick era, but it's sort of, there were weird bits where actually the game was sort of quite, especially in the second quarter, it was quite an entertaining seesaw contest.
Yeah, sort of, I mean, a lot of, like, a lot of things. No, well, it's weird that, you know, the West Coast game was truly dire in moments, but actually some of the individual components about it I enjoyed more. Like, we better games from Corey Ellis, McIntosh, Manager much of a muchness, a bit less from Dan Rioli this week. Like, you know, when I'm looking for things that get me through the week, it's the, you know, it's the performances of the players for whom, you know, they're very much unknown who they're going to turn into. Like, you know, whilst I'm always hesitant to give up on a player after a month, you know, Townsend isn't offering all that much inspiration.
Could I just interrupt you there, Nick? I did read something funny of the good black humour on the internet. Was you know, Diary, sort of one of the cynical wits on Punt Road. He's more of a Dimmer fan than a lot of people on the internet right now. But he made a funny joke. He did an imaginary conversation between Blair Hartley and Dimmer in the off season, and Dimmer says to Blair, I really need some inside mids. And, look, I know you're crap at your job, so I'm going to give you two chances. And Blair goes, right, I've got your fix, mate. here you go, here's Townsend and Andrew Moore. Off you go, good luck next year. Now, okay, you obviously aren't as amused by the joke, but I did find that sort of imaginary scenario, and very harsh for various reasons we don't need, well, not very harsh, slightly harsh, for reasons we don't need to go into. I did have some sympathy for Hardwick having to, try and sort of eke out a win with Townsend, who is, as we know from his GWS games, his VF, Neufeld days and now his Richmond days, a very worthy footballer, but a fundamentally limited one.
Yeah, look, I had more hope for Townsend than Moore. Like, Moore's statistical profile over 6 years was pretty bad. Now, you know, you are literally shopping at the bargain end of the basement, so you do get what you pay for, sadly. But, yeah, Townsend I hadn't completely ruled out, but, you know, the early returns are less than ideal. Well, I wouldn't. Frankly, I have a lot less antipathy towards Blair Hartley. I think, you know, his return on investment generally still stacks up. It's the, you know, you shouldn't be asking your undrafted or your delisted free agent to carry a key role. It's the, you know, that we chased a higher profile midfielder, well, and have done so for some time and have yet to deliver, which, frankly, that's Dan Richardson's job.
I'm more in the camp that he should have done more, but I don't want to get sidetracked into that debate now while we're at the start of a game and we haven't even discussed some of the good performances.
Mm.
So should we transition to some of the good performances? And,
well,
you know,
there were some obvious very good ones. Negatives. I do have a player I do genuinely dislike now, and frankly, I'm pretty ambivalent about most Melbourne players because, you know, a decade of sustained ineptitude provides that sort of response. But Tom Bugg, you know, I can, you know,
hardly a negative disliking another opposition player, but yeah, he is an annoying player.
When he kicked that goal in the second quarter that clinched a final spot for them, I thought that was fair enough to celebrate the way he did, particularly after their big win against Essendon a few weeks ago. You know, they've clearly got a lot to feel good about themselves.
Yeah, no, that was, yeah, that was, I mean, A, it was very premature. Could have,
yeah,
like,
the margin was 3 points at the time. Yeah, margin was 3 points. Melbourne have had a reputation of having some players who are pretty happy with themselves in spite of mediocre performance. Yeah, I would have thought you'd be pretty sensitive about that.
I did like Kerry's commentary on that. That Dennis Bacon never would have put up with that kind of thing.
Hmm.
I hate to say it, though, they can call it sort of when they've got three in a row. They're confident when they play us. That's quite annoying.
I know. Anyway. It is annoying. Look, I tried to make sense of Max Gorn throughout the game. And, you know, that's like,
I wouldn't do that.
Well, do you know, he was drafted in the same draft class as Dustin Martin. So he's played fewer than 8 games a season over the course of his AFL career through 2 knee reconstructions, and suddenly in his 7th AFL season, he turns into one of the best players in the comp. That's Ruckman.
He's a very good player.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the truth, but there is certainly some merit to the idea if you swap him the teams he's playing for, that we win the game. I mean, you could often say that about the best player on a team, but
I know, but there's
merit to the argument.
The odds of Max Gorn turning into a dominant ruckman, yeah, almost nil up until the last couple of months, and suddenly he is inexplicable.
So Cochin had, if we can move on to some actual positives, Cochin had 20 contested disposals, which is one off his career high, and certainly goes to a developing theme I've had for the last few weeks that he's winning a lot of his own ball. And, you know, because he's been criticised a lot, sort of been going out of my way to point out that he's actually been, he's now, and he has been the last few years, he's actually now in the top 10 in the AFL contested possession. So he's like genuinely having one of his best seasons. Now, the interesting thing was that, well, look, he's doing a lot of in and under work, and some of his kicks are scrappy, and the AFL ratings, which rate people, midfielders who get good forward thrusts, didn't love his game. They didn't hate it, but they didn't love it. They loved other midfielders more, which I'll talk about in a second. But, I mean, as far as sort of, if you're looking at someone to set an example of for hard work on the inside mid, as an inside mid, unless you're sort of Jack Viney having a game of your career, he's actually pretty hard to fault.
Yeah, and, you know, I think part of the reason why he's winning so much ball is he's getting no help. he's not facing all that much competition from his fellow midfielders, sadly. Although I was encouraged that that's the closest thing we've seen to normal Shane Edwards this week of his games this year.
Oh, actually, and in fairness, that was something I wanted to mention as well. I completely agree. And the AFL ratings loved him, actually. They liked his game better than Chimps. But I thought Miles was much closer, 14 contested possessions.
Yeah, he was back winning free kicks, which is always a good sign that he's the first one to the ball. And so doing his trademark head down, make contact, fling head back, move. So yeah, that's
yeah. And the problem
that was closer to normal.
And so the problem here is this is where the conversation stops about our competent midfield players.
I know it is. Yeah, it is. It is genuinely depressing. Marich, I thought battled hard. All things considered. Given he was playing against a complete freak. Gorn.
The one thing I'll say about in a game, very nice way to put it, is that one thing I noticed about Marich is he really is one of the best on our team hand passing in traffic. If you look at him closely, if you look at his inside work, it is actually very, very, he very often hits the right target with hand passes, which I know is reflective in his clearance stats, but you know, that's the thing about Marich is when, and we've said this before about him, even when he's getting his ass kicked, he always keeps punching, he always keeps counter-punching. You never knock him out, you always beat him on points. Whereas Ty Vickery last week, frankly, was beaten on points and carried out on the stretcher. Oh, sorry, knocked out and carried out on the stretcher while the other opposition ruckmans danced in the ring. Moving on.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of which, playing a full-time forward had a much better, or mainly forward, had a much better game and kicked a few goals. Three.
I know. And people may not have noticed that. Well, depending on how you feel about Jack Watts, suddenly Ty Vickery, with Hooker signing. Who's signing with Essendon? It's quite possible that Ty Vickery is now the most attractive free agent available at the end of the year.
Yeah. Interesting.
I think that's and I think this is a topic to return to because the I've said that contract talks are on hold. I haven't quite. You know, it's not quite at the stage that, you know, we've seen the Patrick Dangerfield script and it's not quite that yet. But, you know, there is a pause there. And
I can understand why.
Yeah, I can understand why. And I also thought, you know, Hooker re-signing actually has now, instead of getting potentially the number two pick in the draft, you've now signed on for the right to play Hooker $800,000 when he's 33 years old. did really wonder quite if Essendon was had come out ahead on that.
Yeah, well, you know, you can also understand why they made their choice to do it the way they have. I thought, now, it's not going to be a theme this week, but people will know I'm pretty down on Dimmer, but I actually liked the way he handled Dusty. He was clearly having another bad game, and he actually made an effort three-quarter time when he was giving him the old-fashioned pull your finger out, mate, and you've got the talent to win the game. Now, it didn't work, but he actually made it. He did it in a very sort of dignified way, and I often recalling how Terry Wallace was in his last year for Richmond when there was so much pressure on him. You know, he can say a lot of things about Dimmer, but his conduct sort of to his playing group and in the press conference is still far superior to, I think people forget, you know, I know this is one of your favourite themes, Nick, how bad things have been in the past. And I think that's one thing that people do forget.
Mm. Yeah, sort of the, you know, the Terry, the chaos and backstabbing and, you know, that it took like someone like, you know, Chris Newman, and a lot of respect for his ability to stand up in the midst of chaos. And thankfully, that type of leadership hasn't been required yet. You know, it is still a unified, if depressed, football club. But I have no idea what's going on. You know, Dusty's home life has been the source of much speculation. But you know, do you give the guy free pass for his form this season? I don't know.
So just a comic sidebar, Nick. Richo suggested during the week that they should all go down to Swan Street and have a few beers together and sort of let their hair down. Over under, how many beers do you think Trent Cotchin needs before he tells a PG rated joke?
How many beers would it take before Trent Cotchin told a funny joke? Would be an even more question. I wouldn't instinctively expect that Trent's a very funny man.
No, I'll leave that with you. Is there any other? I had a few players that I didn't think played so well. I was going to mention, this, in a very Richmond Tiger talk thing to point out, I'll just note that I think Daniel Rioli had his career high contested possessions, which was 8.
It literally makes me sad when he doesn't kick a goal. You know.
Well, he did have a great tackle on Nathan Jones, which, if you think about it, it's pretty amazing. Which tells you how much tackling is about sort of more than just strength, because Nathan Jones's biceps practically weigh more than
he does. It is one of the exciting Daniel Rioli features, is that somehow, despite, you know, a very limited elite footy background, somehow he just arrives in AFL knowing how to tackle. You hear many things about TB Island football, about how exciting it is, but despite having read the Martin Flanagan's very good book about Michael Long, I didn't get the impression that tackling was a big thing in the Tiwis. But yeah, he was seemingly just has elite tackling technique already.
Yep, whatever it is, he's got it. Is there any other positive players that you wanted to mention?
Look, I sort of, David Asprey, I was glad he looked, you know, he looked reasonable, given I'd sort of almost ruled him out for the season the week before when he was being carried off with a ankle injury.
So he took 3 contested marks, but he actually was writing down his numbers. I did sort of make some notes about him. He fluffed quite a few kicks, and when he had a shot for goal, I was surprised that he had plenty of distance on the kick, because I wondered whether his injury had affected his ability to kick, but maybe he just fluffed a few kicks and he was having a bad day, but I want to keep an eye on anyway.
Mm. Yeah, look, his contested mark stats are good. his kicking disposal for a defender, his kicking efficiency is well below average right now. And I'm hoping that it is a product of still not having played all that much senior footy, because, you know, there doesn't seem to be anything actually wrong with his technique at first glance. It just seems to be a question of the decisions he's making with the pace of the game. But he does need to tighten that up.
Anyway, he'll get plenty more opportunities, especially with Rance injured.
I know, that was very... Because he was playing really well again, and completely out of character for him. He did the right
thing. It was. Also, someone who's a very big fan of him did point out to me after I said that he has occasionally done silly things before, but never quite as silly as that. No, so it was a great show.
Never quite silly. He can be a little... I think he can verge on the deliberately clumsy sometimes when spoiling, which I'm actually okay with, but yeah. It was a brain fart.
He's like given away dumb 50s and stuff before, late in games when he's got the irrits, but yeah. Punching back Jack Watts in the back of the head was clearly a low point.
If you're being flippant about it, you're saying that you're giving life to what a lot of frustrated football fans have wanted to do over the years, but it was dumb.
Yeah, it's like it's like posting something angry on social media occasion after a bad loss. It occasionally makes you feel better, but ultimately pointless. So Corey Ellis, despite the fact he's played in front of bigger crowds, I'd imagine, did look like he was a bit overawed by the inverted commas occasion. It was more fumbly than he's been in the past, but, you know, he hasn't been dropped this week, so good on him. He'll get a chance to make it back.
I know, it is. It's interesting who gets the benefit of the doubt at selection and who doesn't. But, you know, Menadue, Ellis, Rioli, yes, Lennon, no. Which I think speaks to defensive effort as much as anything.
Speaks to something. Who else?
Oh, look, that was it from me.
So Stevie Morris, God, I bagged him a lot as a forward, but I always thought he was sort of okay as a back.
He had one really good season, and then, yeah, it's been... That form has been elusive, and he was.
He
was okay.
I disagree. Like I watched closely some of the times when Gartlett got off the leash, and
I didn't enjoy.
I couldn't believe. Like I was just, Steve, what did you do? Like you let him get away from you just at the most important moments. I honestly have no idea who's a better option between Morris and Hunt. And frankly, I don't think the coaches do either because they keep rotating them. But, I'm certainly no longer of the opinion. I actually find it sad, but, it was not a game that stood up well on the videotape. But again, he's kept his spot. So, you know, maybe they saw coaches knew something that I didn't from watching the tape.
Well,
anyone?
Yeah, look,
anyone else
Hunt,
you want
to? Hunt hasn't been setting the world on fire. So I do think it is choosing between a tray full of plastic spoons at times.
Oh, I think that's a very generous way of putting it. Anyone else?
No, that was it for me.
Oh, I should have mentioned Sammy Lloyd.
Continuing to over under enjoy over good work.
Over under goals for the year.
I'm thinking mid-30s, which is way more than I would have expected at the start of the season.
Well, that's very low, though, because he's averaging to a game, isn't he?
I'm building in a bit of regression to the mean.
Yeah, that's fair. If he gives above 40, I'm considering buying myself a number 2 Texas A&M jersey in honor of Johnny Football. I know that seems a long bow, but I've always had a soft spot for Sammy Lloyd, like, because he's a different type.
As I've said before, he needs to kick goals just for that. He does get left behind a bit running for a loose ball in the forward line. But I think last year when he was sort of the small forward, that was more of a problem than when he's playing next to Rioli. I think there's a better mix when you've got the two of them.
I don't know, the one downside interpretation you could say as well, he's in the team, but we're not winning, so maybe the coaches were right last year that they weren't picking him. Who the hell knows? I mean, I prefer he's just been given a good chance and he's taken it.
I think he's got better. He looks like an AFL footballer now, more so than he has before. And, good on him. He's done the work and reaping the rewards.
All right, moving on.
I was going to ask you that. So you've been doing some player scouting of the AIS squad.
Oh yeah. So actually, I should have led with this. So I happened to see the AIS squad play a game on Sunday, and I actually didn't know he was in this. I sort of vaguely was aware, but there was number 6, and they wear names on the back of the AIS squad jersey. And it was number 6, Naish. So it was young Patrick, who we discussed last week.
You were to be forgiven not to expect that, because there are, to confuse people, there are two AIS squads. One's this year's draft eligible players, and then there's the 2017 class. So when you turned up at that game, you had no right to expect that Naish. You had a 1 in 2 chance that Naish would be in the team, and he was. When you texted me about it, I actually went online and disappeared down a YouTube hole watching clips of the 95 qualifying final. So that was clearly the highlight of my football weekend.
Yeah, so I had obviously he's too young. I'm not going to make any definitive judgment about him. But the sort of the things that struck me about him is, so he's, as you pointed out, he's with people his own age. As you've also pointed out to me off air, he's sort of bottom age, and you can see that he's quite slight. He's a smaller guy. He's not as short as his dad was relative to other players. Like, I didn't sort of overly scout him. How tall is he? About 6 foot?
He's just over 5'11".
Okay. Well, that's a good guess. He's sort of mid-sized and he's a bit slighter than his dad. When he played the game, he lined off on a half-back flank. The other team played a loose in defense, so he was left free. So he did a lot of running up and down the wing to get free. He's not a natural inside player, as you probably expect with a slighter body. He's more of an opportunist. It'll make you laugh to know he started on the half-back flank and his first kick was a shot for goal. But it was sort of okay because he was running forward, because he didn't have a man and he was doing the right thing. So he gathered and he crumbed a nice, ball off the pack and, had a shot which missed, but he was under handed pressure, but it was a nice bit of skill. He had a few other shots, didn't sort of stand out, wasn't in the best 5 players, but, looked like he belonged. And I saw some of the, I was chatting to the, one of the assistant coaches, and I saw the running data, for the quarter, and, he was, without giving away too much, he was just for that quarter amongst the very best on the team. So that was good. And, I had a brief chat to one of the other assistant coaches who's a former, AFL player. Won't name him, and just asked him about him, and he said he really liked him. And, amazingly, I didn't ever turn the conversation there. We got on within 30 seconds of talking. We got on to the 1995 preliminary final. So it was, qualifying final, but, it was quite a pleasant experience to be able to talk that up. And, the coach I was talking to wasn't playing during that final. He was an Essendon fan and was at the game. So, yes, It was certainly the highlight of my the footballing highlight of my weekend.
Mm. Yeah, good times. I wanted to mention about the VFL, and look, it was a disappointing loss. I mean, part of it being a disappointing loss is, you know, when you withdraw players at half time, you know, it certainly didn't help the club playing better in the second half. But Ivan Soldo.
Lennon didn't get withdrawn, he got injured.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. Ivan Soldo, 16 disposals, two contested marks. He's got a goal in every game this season. Like, he is now a competent VFL ruckman, which from some of the reports from when he first arrived at Richmond and sort of was almost apparently at the stage where it was embarrassing to have him out there. That's a real achievement. I have no idea if that trajectory is going to continue. He's only just turned 20 years of age, so, you know, in ruckman terms, he's still a baby. But yeah, that is worth noting.
How do you feel about the Lee McBean Chol comparison?
Well, I did actually feel the odd twinge. Now, I was encouraged by McBean, four contested marks, 15 disposals. That's exactly where he needs to be. Dropped off in the second half. Had some teammates doing that. Now, that whether or not that's a function of not getting any supply, but I did watching that Marbio Chol highlight video. We've said before that the boy can do some. He can do a highlight video.
So you're not one to criticise selection, but if you were to say, well, let's put one of the kids in and pipe him as third tall, which would you put in this week?
Well, it was pretty clear during preseason that Chol was the guy that they were looking.
But that's what the coaches think. What do you think?
Look, you would have to go McBean unless he'd just not been trying at all on defence. That would be the only sort of defence. Yeah. I think we are. I didn't particularly understand playing two ruckmen this week since Port Adelaide are playing a kid who's in his first game as their. Second game, sorry, as their number one ruck. They've dropped Matthew Loeb after getting frustrated with him. So, I didn't understand that. But, yeah, long story short, I would go McBean, but it wouldn't, you know, a few more games like Chol had, it wouldn't surprise me to see him on the verge of selection. Although, speaking of the verge of selection, I was... Markov didn't get raved about, but he's emergency again this week, along with Castagna, who did play a good game. And yeah, I would, you know, you think about the things that get you through a potentially extremely disappointing season. Yeah, debutants, always fun.
Yep. I think I would encourage people to look at average ages after this weekend's game. Is there anything about VFL before we move on to previewing this week's game?
No, that was Griffiths rucked okay. I'm keen for them to kick tyres on the Ben Griffiths as ruckman experiment a bit more, because frankly I've given up on his capacity to be a functioning key forward, much to my sadness. I'd Callum Moore.
Ben Griffiths managed to exceed 12 possessions without exploding. So that fear that's held him back for many years is actually not true.
Yeah, It'd be what happens to the team in its contested disposals when he's in the ruck. That's the Ivan Marich versus Sean Hampson dilemma. Adam Markham racking up a lot of ball, disposal not perfect, but yeah, I mean, again, if you're in, if you're seeing what you've got, yeah, that's perhaps one for the second half of the season. So, speaking of disappointing seasons, it's fair to say things haven't gone to plan for Port either this year. And, you know, when everything starts going wrong, everything does go wrong. Camp, they're well down on personnel this week.
Yeah, partly by choice, partly by injury. But, yeah, it's certainly it's a funny old team we're playing now. It's going to be inexperienced, keen to make a mark. Much younger, we'll be quite an old team. We'll be older than we were last week, where we had an average age of 25, just over 25. So, yeah, it's going to be sort of a weird game. I don't quite know what to make of it. Like, I mean, it could well be that we win by 10 goals and you'll sort of go, okay, well, that was fun and we'll see what happens next week. Or if we win by 2 points, you'll sort of go, well, that was a bit crap. We'll see what happens next week. And if we lose, we'll go, I wonder who's going to be coaching us in 3 weeks' time.
You know, it's, I mentioned Port Adelaide's Ruckman. So he got drafted at the end of 2014. After GWS, who had first dibs on him because he was one of their academy players, so he's gone from being rejected by GWS as not even being worth a fifth round draft pick to being Port Adelaide starting ruckman in a year and a bit. So yeah, that's not a bad sign of how far off the expected plan that Port Adelaide season's gone.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't think this, it's a very much a wait and see game. I think it's hard to analyze it properly considering, the personnel and the form lines of both teams.
I know. Look, if how Port Adelaide win, it's, you know, it's a pretty quick team they've got. And, you know, that's, the problem with our defensive structures this year is that, when they're fine once the structure's in place, but the ball gets over the back and, you know, two-on-three situation and we can look a bit slow and we don't have Alex Rance to clean things up. That's my... that's the path to defeat for this week, as far as I'm concerned.
I didn't make a big deal about it in the game because, you know, it's how many bad things, but it was really noticeable how much we were breaking down across the back line, that Melbourne would have multiple outnumbers in our back line, which is very, you know, almost never happened last year. Now, let's not go into it because it could be a combination of a number of factors. But yeah, you're right. If that keeps happening and Port, when they're playing well, do it, that is the path to unhappiness.
Well, it worries me having both Grimes and Rance out because they're our two most,
and Vlossy.
And, well, Grimes and Rance are our two most athletic defenders, whereas Vlossy, I think, just reads the play really well. And all three of them being out is not a recipe for happiness. But
yeah. I think it's not just that. I think athleticism is important, but I also think there's an element of structure to when you get those overlaps. Because
Something is clearly going wrong, and it looks worse when you don't have the guys cleaning up other people's mistakes as well. But
I also think Vossi is an incredibly intelligent footballer for his limitations. So Nico, just before we move on and finish the show, we've gone a decent amount for a team that's lost four in a row and, you know, probably paying quite generous odds these days to make the eight. What's your, just the one idea that's been bouncing around the internet, hypothetically speaking, what's your gut feeling about Matthew Knights as a potential head football coach for the Richmond Football Club?
Well, I'm always of the view it's sort of there's nothing harder to assess than a coach. Look, I've actually met someone who spoke really well of him as a coach at the VFL. You know, but he hasn't come up a lot when other senior jobs have been mentioned. That's sort of, you know, I deeply love the memory of Matthew Knights, the footballer. So while there are parts of it that would make me really happy that my reservation would be that other clubs haven't really kicked the tyres on him as much. But,
So you were talking relative to someone like a Stuart Dew or someone like that?
Yeah. There's coaches who are, you know, in the mix for three or four jobs, you know, and widely considered next man up. Now, yeah, Knights hasn't been one of those guys for a couple of years, and that would be my concern.
That's fair. I agree with the romance. I mean, his CV does talk for itself, but it is someone has put this wisely somewhere else, but about the Matthew Knights issue is that I've always going to be very careful about hiring favorite sons as coaches.
Yeah, I mean, he does have coaching experience, and he was badly...
Good coaching experience.
He was very badly treated by Essendon, so the redemption story would also be delicious. But yeah, it's the... But people seem to think of him as being a great VFL coach rather than a potential senior coach would be the concern.
Yeah, you'd want to look how much he's actually doing matchday senior planning for Geelong. And, you know, of course, the thing about hiring your idol, I mean, he's not personally my idol, but he's close too, is that one day you might have to sack them.
Yeah. Look, if we tore that band-aid off with KB, sort of.
Yeah, maybe a bit too quickly. Yeah, and yet didn't work out well for us. It only took us 15 years to heal, so. All right.
Yeah, well, and we did replace him with a much better coach.
It's true, yeah. But it's probably better not to coach him, to hire him in the first place.
Best to stay away from the legends. My name's Nick. All
right. I'm Andy.
See you next time.